Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you the Deanna Montfort Show. Diana's guest for tonight will be Julie Gray Owens. Greetings and welcome, Diana. How are you?
I'm just fine. How are you, Hercules?
I'm doing incredibly well, and I'm looking forward to your show tonight.
Well, thanks so much. We're looking forward to doing it. And let me introduce my guest, Julie Gray Owens. Hi there.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
Just fine. Let me just tell the audience about us, you and me. Okay, first you. Well, no, first me, because I guess I should explain this. I'm transgender, born male, became female. I've been doing the Diana Montfort Show on cable television for, in January, it will be 33 years. This is an offshoot of the television show, my podcast, produced by the great Hercules Invictus, who was kind enough to invite me to do a podcast. Thank you so much, Hercules. And my guest is hyper well-known, hyper effective transgender activist Julie Gray Owens, who has done more for the transgender community in the New York tri-state area than anyone I can think of. She is going to tell us what we can do as LGBTQ folk and people who know and love LGBTQ folk. That means all you straight people out there. What we can do to circumvent the, frankly, the fascism of the hyper-right wing Supreme Court, which might decide that it's illegal to be gay or trans or, you know, wear pink on Wednesdays. They'll figure something out. So we have to figure out a way to not let them do that to us. Anyway, hi, Julie. How are you?
Good, thank you. Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you. So now let's talk about, now you have 5 points you want to discuss. Why don't you tell us what they are?
Well, in any change that we want to see occur, they always talk about, you know, getting active and being aware of the issues. My organization, Gender Equality New York, has looked at 5 pieces of legislation for New York State, specifically for New York State, in the upcoming 2023 legislative session that we think are important and that we are promoting and seriously working on and doing what we can to see if we can get them passed in the upcoming session. There are actually 5 pieces of legislation. There's a whole lot of legislation out there, but the ones that we think are important are in 5 different areas. One is talking specifically about prison and jail modification, if you will, for transgender people, non-binary people, and intersex people. And by that I mean this legislation that we're talking about, and it's called the Gender Identity Respect, Dignity, and Safety Act. And it's legislation to protect gender-expansive people who are incarcerated. The big issue for our community is if someone...
Well, simplify it for us. In one sentence, what does that mean in layman's terms?
Let me explain that right now, if you are a trans woman, you will be placed in a male facility, which means that you are in severe danger of rape and violence against you. So this bill looks to place you by your gender identity rather than by your biological sex. It includes some other additional issues, but that's the main point of it.
But as it stands now, aren't trans people given, if they ask for it or their attorneys ask for it, protective custody, which is tantamount to solitary confinement, but does at least keep them safe from rape and violence?
It does keep them safe from
the inmates,
rape and violence, but it does keep them safe from rape and violence. But as we are all aware, there are major efforts trying to remove solitary confinement from the prison and jail environment.
Would protective custody come under
that
heading? Would protective custody? Let's not talk over each other. Would protective custody come under that heading of solitary confinement?
It is indeed solitary confinement. They call it by a
different
name, but it's the same thing.
But does it come under the legal heading of it?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you want to put trans women in women's prisons and trans men, presumably, in men's prisons, although that would be very dangerous for trans men, don't you think? Men
well,
with vaginas, I mean, figure it out. The other prisoners would have a field day.
That is true, and that is one of the reasons why the bill allows for the person to step out of that situation. In other words, basically what we're saying is that it allows people to be housed based on
their
gender identity unless the person opts out of that placement. So the person,
Well, all right, bottom line is for me, they can choose their jail. That's what you're saying, right?
Basically.
Okay, good. And how likely is it to pass?
Well, I think there's a very good chance of it passing. We were able to get a number of co-sponsors on the bill during an election year, which was this past year. And we believe that we're going to have a much better chance to do it this year.
Okay. And what are the other 4 points?
Well, the other 4 points are a intersex public information and outreach campaign on medically unnecessary treatments. Simplifying that, basically it would require the New York State Department of Health to conduct public outreach campaigns to inform parents and the medical establishment about the implications of medically unnecessary treatments and surgeries on babies and young children.
But, of course, it's in the eye of the beholder. If you're parents with an intersex child and you feel that conformity is important, you might consider it necessary to have that child modified to fit into male or female categories. I mean, we
that
cannot...
That is exactly what's happening. And the reality is that how do the parents know what the child's gender is to start with?
Well,
Number two,
do we have a right to inflict ourselves on parents who have decided that this is the way to go? I mean, it's their child.
Let me ask this question. Is it appropriate for anyone to do anything to your body at any time that has a serious consequence to that? And
well,
by
many
that
men
I
are
mean
circumcised, and they are often babies when that's done. So what do you say to that?
I would suggest to you that there's a difference between circumcision and irreversible procedures that can cause permanent infertility, pain, incontinence, loss of sexual sensation, and lifelong mental suffering.
Try growing back a foreskin and see how well you do at it. Circumcision is just as permanent as anything else, I would say, wouldn't you?
No, I would not say that circumcision would have an impact on your infertility. I would say that it does not have a continuing of pain or incontinence. And in fact, you know, we can argue about whether there's a loss of sexual sensation or not, but as speaking as a trans woman who had that happen to me, I can tell you I've never had a problem with sexual sensation because of the fact I had that happen to me.
Well, speaking as a good Catholic trans woman.
And I'm not carrying along lifelong suffering from it as well.
Speaking as a good Catholic trans woman who was never circumcised, I'm having a blast, babe, you know?
Right,
but that's
right.
Me. Yeah. But anyway, foreskins forever. What can I say?
Well,
there should be like a softball team, you know, the shirts and the foreskins. I don't know. But anyway, so what's the how close are you to passing that?
Well, we had it actually pass in the Senate, and it didn't make it through the Assembly. So we believe, again, that this is something that will really have an opportunity to make it happen this year. I mean,
what
the thing that we have to understand about this piece of legislation is that these procedures are being done without the informed consent of the person concerned, who's too young to be a part of the decision-making.
Rumor
years
has it
later,
Jamie
after
Curtis was born intersexed.
Right.
She
but we don't know what her situation
comment.
Is and whether she's having issues or not. But I can tell you that when we talk to people who are intersex, years later after the surgery, many adult intersex people feel severe trauma because they were forced into sex and gender categories that don't fit, and studies have shown psychological harm resulting from these early surgeries, including PTSD, depression, an increased risk of suicide, shame, and low self-esteem.
But wouldn't trauma result from being intersexed as well? I mean, if you're a child and you're playing doctor and they see that you have both a penis and a vagina, that's going to be the talk of the neighborhood, and that is going to cause you great trauma because you will be bullied, and some parents might not want you to play with their children and other things, you know?
Well, those are all a part of what can happen. It can also be, if you think about it, in regard to trans kids who come out early, that same process happens to us as well. So, I mean, we can't stop the stigma that is created by people from the outside, but we can prevent, this type of procedure being done without the informed consent. And again, we're not talking about eliminating these type of surgeries. We're just asking that the surgery is delayed until the person can make an adult decision about what they want done to their body. And I
what
think isn't that,
that
something
be?
That we fight for no matter what?
What age would that be? What would you consider an adult
They usually
decision?
Talk about, right now they're talking about, I believe it's called age of consent.
That would
usually
be 7 years of age.
Say again?
Oh, age of consent, not age of reason. So that would be around 16.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what if they ask for it earlier? Would the doctor be allowed to do it then?
I think that in every case, including our community, when we involve and include mental health professionals, good decisions can be made. But before that person even has a chance to say their first words, and we're already doing surgery on them, cutting things off, sewing things up,
well, that's a circumcision
we might want to find out whether or not, this is something that they want. The important thing to understand is, and we really didn't talk about who the intersex community is.
How many
that
intersex
terminology,
people are there?
Currently, experts believe that the intersex population could be as high as 12% of the world's population. But usually the numbers that are being thrown around is about 1.2% of the population. And that 1.2% is approximately equal to the number of red-haired people in the world. And so I'm not suggesting that red-haired people are intersex. What I am suggesting is that I personally know a bunch of red-haired people. That may mean that
I'm a natural intersex redhead. Yeah. It can't be number one on the list of priorities for politicians since, let's face it, 1% is not an overwhelming majority here. And, but go for it,
When have we ever worried about the size of the population in regard to legislation? How many bills have been passed that have helped rich people and not the majority of people who are not rich people? So again, that is not a reason for fighting for legislation. The reality here is, as far as we're concerned, is we are looking to take the communities that are most in pain. When you consider, for example, the prison and jail protection bill, I mean, if you are a trans woman placed in a male prison, you are in there in a living hell. And the reality is that they should not have to have that. When we talk about the intersex community, we're talking about, yes, a small community, but the impact of what's being done without, and again, I want to confirm one thing. This bill only does public information. It requires the New York State Department of Health to conduct a public information and outreach campaign. It makes them create educational materials for parents and guardians, and it creates resources for medical practitioners. And so what we're really talking about is finally just educating the public on a community and on a medical situation that shouldn't be occurring as early as it is. So we're looking at bills that have an impact in serious situations. When we talk about the third piece of legislation, which is the Student Suicide Prevention Act, we're talking about a situation that we are all very clear on as far as the LGBT community. There is no question that the LGBT community is at a higher rate of suicide than any other group.
Why?
And it's usually done... Why?
Why?
I'll let you answer that one.
Well, no, you answer it. Why?
Well, the reality is the stigma of coming out is extremely pressure-filled. And if you don't come out and you live a lie during that period of time, it's extremely hard for young people to, deal with that situation.
Well, you know, I never had the option of being in the closet. I was so obviously feminine that the closet was a vague rumor to me. I was never in the closet. Somehow I soldiered on. I see your point, though. I did not feel like committing suicide. I felt like smacking a few people, though, right in the face. But that's different. But they say suicide is aggression turned inward. I believe in turning it outward, but that's another story. And I went to Catholic school where, you know, even the nuns were these very homophobic, which is strange that so many of them were lesbians, very homophobic women, but there you are.
But here's the other point, and you just said it yourself, and that was is that you were basically out. And the reality is that many of our community members are not in situations where they can be out. And that is an internal struggle that's going on, along with growing up, going through your teenage years, and so forth. And so that's one of the reasons why, again, this is an extremely important bill, and it's one that we think has to be dealt with.
Well, what can you do, though, to stop bullying? I mean, children, we all know how cruel they can be, and we all know that once they're away from any kind of adult supervision, you know, they always throw, you faggot, or, you lezzy. You know, I mean, that's how kids talk. That's the way it is, you know.
Right. Well, this bill specifically requires the Board of Education or the local educational agency serving the students in grades 7 to 12 to adapt policies and procedures and guidelines on student suicide prevention and make sure that there's training for school personnel, create training crisis situations, response protocols, and making sure that there are mental health assessments that are available. So this is not going to stop bullying, for example, but what it is going to do is prepare the school to deal with a child if they show signs of possibly being involved in a suicide, I think they call it ideation.
What would those signs be? What would those signs be?
Well, since I'm not a professional in mental health, I don't think I can practically answer that or probably correctly answer that. But the reality is that there are professionals that know how to do, suicide support and interventions. So
let
that
me tell you something. I have a friend who sadly died of long COVID, but her cousin was the school psychiatrist in a Connecticut community. Her son, the school psychiatrist's son, who went to the same school she was the psychiatrist at, was 13 years old, fell in love with a 14-year-old girl on the internet, never met her in person. The girl's mother called the school psychiatrist, mother of the son, and said, you know, they're too serious. They're too young for this. We have to put a stop on it. So the school psychiatrist said to her son, look, you cannot talk to Marcy again. You just can't, okay? This is getting blown way out of proportion. Relax, take a step back. The son said, okay. He went upstairs, and he hanged himself. He was a straight kid. He'd never met this girl with whom he was in love on the internet, and he killed himself. Straight as can be, obviously, killed himself over a girl, but, you know, I mean, I think maybe today suicide is considered a viable alternative by many young people, gay or straight. What do you think? And that's
I think that's the reason why this bill is so important.
Yes. That can be a double-edged sword, though. I mean, a psychiatrist can see a child acting out of the norm and say, well, this child is mentally ill. And this, you know, I mean, Van Gogh was a nut, but he was Van Gogh, you know? I mean, what do we do about children who are not, rosy-cheeked, angelic children who are unusual and, you know, that a psychiatrist can have the power to change that child's life and his or her parents' lives by, putting that kid in, say, a mental hospital or something? That's not good, is it?
Well, that has nothing to do with this piece of legislation. So, you know, we're really talking apples and oranges here. What we're talking about is preparing the school to be able to act in cases of possible suicide. Look for signs of possible suicide. You know, be aware of it and have steps like, for example, we now prepare our kids for potential, you know, people entering the school with guns. If we do that kind of processing, why wouldn't we want our schools to also be on the lookout for our students who may be suffering for whatever reason, whether it's a girlfriend, a boyfriend, whether they're LGBT, whether it's their parents are brutal or whatever it happens to be? Why wouldn't we want our school professionals to keep an eye out for our kids and make sure that they stay healthy and get through school and get through, you know, those teenage years to their adulthood? You know, that's
what I think is
important.
So, I agree.
You know, I mean, we're not talking about, you know, mental health professionals putting people in, you know, some type of, you know, mental health facility or something like that. All we're simply doing is making sure that every school basically understands that suicide prevention is important and takes the proper logical steps to make sure that their student body, you know, that they don't lose anyone in their student body. And so I think that, you know, we have to make sure that what we're looking at is, you know, just preparing our schools to do a better job and protect our kids. That's really all it is. So,
and
but
we
you
need
did bring
laws
up an
for
interesting
that?
Point. I'm sorry?
We need a law for that? We can't just train the schools?
Well, how do you think the schools are forced to train themselves? For example, you know, you live in Manhattan, which happens to be, in some cases, probably the more liberal area of New York State. But let's go upstate. Do you really think without a law that any Board of Education is going to start putting out some suicide prevention steps or anything like that? I mean, for all we know, they'll ban the books. They'll ban, you know, they'll ban the opportunity for a mental health professional to start talking about suicide prevention. So
yeah,
the only way it's going
true.
To get done is through legislation. But you
yeah,
brought up
okay.
another point too, which was, you know, the bullying aspect. And that brings us up to a fourth piece of legislation, which is called the Transgender, Gender Nonconforming, Gender Nonbinary Anti-Discrimination Requirements in Schools. And that's simply legislation that requires New York schools to adopt policies and procedures that ensure that schools and their employees treat students consistent with their gender identities or their gender expressions. And that includes using the chosen and preferred name, using the preferred pronouns, and so forth. Just, you know, basically accepting our students, recognizing our students, and taking care of our students. And that's an important step here in New York State as well.
Oh, I agree. And I think, you know, the bathroom issue and all that. What about non-binary kids? They don't want to go to the boys' room. They don't want to go to the girls' room. Where do they go?
Well, one of the things that should be happening in all schools is there should be a gender-neutral bathroom. And that gender-neutral bathroom should be available for all students, not just non-binary students, not just for trans students, but for all students, as well as, you know, changing areas and so forth. You know, I don't know if you remember those days in high school where
glorious naked
exactly.
young men. Do I ever?
There were very well. You may have looked at
I
it that way.
I often remember it late
people,
at night when I'm alone. But yes, you were
many
saying.
People are uncomfortable changing in front of other people.
Oh, I was. I hated it.
Right. Well, why would we want then to have an open area where everyone is forced to do that? You know, if you're comfortable doing it, go ahead and do it. It's no problem. But there should be an area for changing if you are someone who likes their privacy and doesn't really want to show your body off.
As I understand it, the shower room is now no longer, you know, with just little dividers. They now have closed showers where no one can look in
New
York.
Well, not
schools.
Every school. Not every
school.
Yeah,
but in newer schools, apparently. You know.
Yeah, but not every school, and certainly not upstate. I mean, most schools are still fighting the idea of having one gender-neutral bathroom in the school facility, believe it or not. And usually, they force the kids to use the bathroom and the nurse's office as an example. And the moment you do that, you know, you are again a target. Why aren't you going to the bathroom like we
right,
all do? Why
exactly.
are you going to that bathroom? And then the kids get picked on because of that.
Yeah. Well, now, what's your next point?
Well, finally, the fifth piece of legislation that we're looking at is the LGBT Long-Term Care Facility Bill of Rights. And that legislation would make it illegal to deny admission or evict a resident based on a person's sexual orientation, their gender identity, or their HIV status. The legislation clearly spells out unlawful actions in regard to harassment, prohibition to restroom use, failure to use a resident's chosen name and pronouns, denying the resident the right to wear clothing and accessories or cosmetics that are permitted to all residents, including cisgender residents, and restricting the resident's right to associate with other residents or visitors, including the right to consensual expressions of intimacy. So in other words, we don't want you to have to go back in the closet as you turn, 70 years old. We want you to be able to be you for the rest of your life till your dying days.
That seems like the most sensible of the 5 points and the most marketable to the assembly members, because there are many senior citizens, some of whom are LGBTQ, and senior citizens vote, obviously. So there is strong incentive for the politicians to pass that particular law.
Well, what's interesting is that this bill's been around for a number of years and hasn't been passed yet. So although, you suggest that it's probably the easiest bill to pass, and I would look at it and probably agree with you, and yet it still hasn't passed.
Why is that?
I don't know. I guess we have to talk to our legislators and find out about that. This is why we believe that these 5 bills are extremely important. I mean, there are other bills that are very important, too. I would not, minimize them. But for our organization, we believe that when we're talking about seniors, when we're talking about our kids in high school, when we're talking about the intersex community, which very few organizations support or do anything to protect them, as well as, dealing with those of us who are incarcerated, we believe that these are 5 bills that really have to be looked at. And we're going to need, a public awareness, if you will, and we're going to need, New Yorkers to reach out to their legislators and make it clear that these bills are important, to provide the safety that's required for our community.
Something interesting. Until the 1950s, the idea of a teenager didn't exist. You hit puberty, you're an adult. Until 1961 or so, it was legal in some states to marry a young woman who was 12. Are you ready for this? 12 years old. So now, my own mother was engaged at 16, married at 17, to my 26-year-old father in 1944. And no one thought that was strange or weird or perverted or anything else. It seems to me that prolonging childhood by inventing the teenager almost did more harm than good. What do you think?
I don't agree with that at all. The reality is that our brains are not formed until, 18, 19, 20 years old.
Actually,
so there is a period of time. I'm sorry?
25, I've read. Yeah.
It could be even later then. That's fine. But the reality is that, we have determined that putting children to work, is not a good idea, that kids should go to school, that it's better for our communities when our kids go to school. If they can go to a trade school or a college, that's wonderful, but let them be, active members of our community. Let them get to become active members of our community. That's why the suicide bill is obviously so important. There's a lot of things that have happened in the past were wrong, and we have corrected them. Not having Social Security, back in the 1920s and, I guess early 30s when I think it was passed, before
it was
that.
1935, actually.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly. That was a terrible time for people who were seniors. They literally couldn't work anymore, and they were expected to just, go in the forest and die, that type of thing. We've come a long way from those days. We don't expect our children to be, working in sweatshops. We don't expect to lock employees into buildings. And then if there's a fire,
the triangle
they die
shirtwaist
in the building.
Fire.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things
those girls
that have been
were
changed.
Locked in.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's a lot of things that used to be that aren't anymore, and thank God that they aren't anymore. We believe these are steps that have to be taken to move our community forward and make us more safe.
I agree. I agree to a point. I don't think that we should, you know, all this sensitivity that's in the air right now, I mean, it's a wonderful thing, yes, but it also, life is hard, and you have to harden yourself to survive. I don't care what you are, straight, gay, whatever color you are, whatever religion, race, sexual orientation, you have to be tough in life, whatever you are. And, you know, to a degree, there's always going to be some fly in the ointment of everyone's life. So I think people have to learn to, well, be strong. And while I agree with all you've said, I also think that we can't really legislate against the pain of life because it's just part of life. You know, like the children being bullied and all that. That's always going to be there. Well, for whatever reason, if you're heavy, if you're short, if you're too tall, if you're, you know, if you're whatever. If you have red hair, they called me Campbell Soup and Carrot Top because I'm a natural redhead. You know, I mean, that's always going to exist. Yes, we can take steps to modify it, but we can't do away with it, and maybe we shouldn't because that's what school is for. It's a socialization process, and children have to learn to put up with the bad with the good. What do you think?
Well, I would disagree with you. Number one, you look at the victim and say, well, you need to be stronger. I look at the person who is causing the pain and say, why must you act like this? I'm not going to go into a jail or a prison and tell a trans woman who's in a male prison, you know, tough luck, stay strong, put up with it. That's not going to work. I'm not going to say to intersex people who have had their body modified without their okay and now are going through sufferings and further surgeries and things, well, stay strong, that's just how things are. I'm not going to say to kids who are planning suicide because of, you know, whatever outside, you know, things are happening to them, to simply stay strong and put up with it because they're going to kill themselves. And I'm certainly not going to allow our seniors to be placed in a long-term facility and be told, go back in the closet, stay strong, it's just the way things are, put up with it.
No, I see your point. I think that's, you're right. But there has to be a balance between, yes, all the wonderful things that you're outlining.
Why? Why does there have to be a balance? Why does the
bad
why
and
do
terrible
we have to
reality
allow things that are bad? Why don't we work to make changes? Why is it okay for a kid to, you know, bully another kid? Why isn't any kid who's a bully taken aside and found out why someone is a bully? I wasn't a bully as a kid. Were you a bully?
No. I
why
was
not?
Bullied.
I understand.
Let me tell
why
you
weren't
short,
you a
quick
bully?
Story. Because I was bullied. But let me tell you a short, quick story. I went to, for a year, I went to the school called St. Stephen's on 28th Street and Lexington Avenue, New York. And I was bullied relentlessly because I was effeminate. And one day in December, we were all in the schoolyard, and they started pushing me back and forth, back and forth. I finally said, you know, I don't have to take this crap. I didn't say crap. And I walked out of the school, went home on the bus, called my mother at her office, told her what happened. She called the head nun, the mother superior, and got me out of that school and got me into a much nicer school. I don't know if that has anything to do with what you're saying, but I was tough enough to say, screw this, I'm out of here. You know, and my mother backed me up. I was lucky that way. But, you know, if I'd gone hand in hand weeping, oh, look what they're doing. Oh, well, no one saved me. That wouldn't have done me much good, you know.
Well, I would suggest that your story shows that you have privilege, that you were privileged enough to be able to leave school, call your mom, and get pulled out and put into a different school. That's privilege. And not everyone has privilege.
Life
some
is
kids,
unfair.
When they,
yeah,
well,
life
again,
is unfair.
I know, and then we're going to go back and say, stay strong. You know, even if you're thinking about suicide, stay strong. The reality is that not everyone has your situation. And the fact is that many kids, if they were to leave school after being bullied, they would probably get a beating back at home and told, get back
terrible.
To that school or
that
you'll get
is
killed.
Terrible. Are
well,
you serious?
That's the reality. I'm so surprised that you think that that's not happening.
My God, that's awful. I can't, full disclosure, I come from a very progressive, gay positive, life positive family. A family of outcasts, I might add. My mother was an actress at 15. My grandfather, her father, was a former Catholic priest who became a lawyer and a politician. So, I mean, and her mother was a feminist at the turn of the 20th century. So we're used to being outcasts, so we sort of know how to ride the waves. But I guess most people aren't used to being outcasts.
Well, not only that, you know, again, I would suggest to you that your background is loaded with privilege. And I don't say that as a bad thing. I say that as lucky you. And as someone who was able-bodied, white, born male, you know, considered heterosexual, considered cisgender.
I was never considered
I walked around having what basically you would consider to be like five aces in a card game, okay? Those are all real positive. Those are all good reasons not to
and
be
handsome.
Bullied.
And handsome. You were
well,
pretty,
I don't
so
know
you
if I was or not,
handsome.
But that was another story. But the reality is that we have to get beyond our view from privilege and look at what's happening to other people. And I believe by taking my privilege that I've had in the past, I can use it to help others. And that's the my mission for the rest of my life at this point. So again, I think that we have to look at, you know, individuals. We have to look at those who have less than us, those who are in harder situations, and do what we can to make their life easier. And I believe that in my heart. And I believe that's the basis of all the religions that are out there is that, you know, the weak need to be taken care of by the strong.
I agree. I totally agree. And I also think the golden rule, treat others as you would have them treat you.
If only the bullies would hear that.
I would imagine that most bullies are quite troubled themselves and are acting out and displacing their rage onto their schoolmates as opposed to their big bruiser fathers or their psycho mothers or something like that.
Exactly. And so why aren't we giving them mental health so that we prevent the bullying on kids, on the other kids, so to speak?
Yeah.
That's why just telling the kid who's being picked on to stay strong does nothing. The reality is we need to act on those who are the bully.
I agree. I think that's a wonderful idea. Now, you are strictly about New York State at the moment. Are you planning to go national with your trans activism?
I think right now what we like to talk about is staying in our backyard. And by that I mean that we can make important changes here in New York State. If you told me that in 5 or 6 years, you know, we would create another gender equality Pennsylvania or a gender equality New Jersey or something, I would say, oh, that's nice. But right now our focus is on New York State and making a difference here in New York State. You know, it's interesting that think about marriage equality. Marriage equality was actually passed in Massachusetts years before it became law here in New York State. And yet, literally, once New York State passed marriage equality, it was a very short period of time before it became, you know, national, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the things that happen in New York State have an impact on other states.
Well, they always say, as New York goes, so goes the world, actually. So, yeah.
Well, and so therefore, by making the changes that we can make here in New York State, we believe that, you know, it will help others. But again, we're staying in our backyard looking at the things that we can do to make things better here in our state.
What do you make of places like Texas and Florida? They're so obviously, unabashedly anti-LGBTQ. I mean, they just don't care. They're like Jim Crow for LGBTQ folk. What in God's name can we do about people like that?
Well, I think the thing that we have to understand is that if you took the population of Texas and you were able to separate them out, you would find that there is a very loud, a minority, but a very loud minority that is anti-LGBT. And you would find another very small group that is pro-LGBT. You know, maybe they've got a son or daughter who's gay. You know, maybe, you know, they're members of the community and so forth. And so there's another small group. And then there's a group in the middle, which is the very large group, which we call the movable middle. Some of those people can become allies. Some of those people can be, once they learn more about the issues, learn more about the community, have some way of being touched by the community, can be moved to the ally side.
That's why Texas and Florida are so clever in a pernicious way to ban books that would educate people about the LGBTQ community.
That's
correct.
They're
forestalling an awakening, an enlightenment, by banning books that would awaken and enlighten.
Exactly. And if you take a look here at New York State, we have the exact same thing. We have a small minority of people who are against the LGBT community. We have a small but growing group of people who are strong allies. And we have the movable middle. And how do we make the movable middle move towards becoming an ally and pro-LGBT? And the way that you do that is through education. And we do that by going to churches and providing what we call Gender 101 forums. We do that by going to agencies and doing trainings.
Well, you go to police departments, as
we
I understand.
Actually, yeah, exactly. I train both at the Nassau and Suffolk County Police Academies. We're working with colleges, universities, agencies, mental health facilities. We're doing, you know, anyone who will listen to us, we do education. We do women's groups, as crazy as it sounds. And we've had some of our most successful, meetings with simply women's groups or church groups.
Women have always been our allies because we're joining them, we trans women, and they appreciate that. It's men who sometimes despise us unless they want us, in which case they despise us and they want us. And that can often lead to murder, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very true. But part of it is education. Part of our training is to make people understand that they have a gender identity. They may be cisgender, but they have a gender identity. And they have, you know, obviously they have a biological sex. We all have that. But we all have a gender identity.
And the two do not always match. In other words, your gender identity is pretty much fixed by the time you're, say, three. And your body has little to do with I was startled to find out I was born a boy. I mean, when I went to nursery school, I was four, and I was sort of surprised, you know. I thought I was a 35-year-old woman. Who knew, you know?
Exactly. Well, the reality is that, you know, once we introduce these concepts and we start explaining how we all share these characteristics and there's no need for boxes, it's to understand that basically these characteristics are like a continuum or a spectrum, and it means that there's an infinite number of points of that continuum, and there's a point for you, and there's a point for me. You know, when I sit down and I tell people, well, for example, you know, do all women have the same size breasts? And of course not. Some women have bigger breasts, some have smaller breasts. If we were to take a room full of men and test for testosterone levels, we would find that they all don't have the same level of testosterone. Some will be high, some will be low, some will be in the middle. Does that make them less of a man? Of course not. And the same thing goes when we talk about gender identity, when we talk about gender expression, and for that matter, sexual orientation. And so the reality is when we try to humanize this and we try to make sure that we bring in community members to talk a little bit about their story. We've had very good success with this happening. And so, you know, we believe that the movable middle has to be educated. And if we do a good enough job educating, they're either going to be, they're going to move slightly towards our community. Some will fall over into the ally category, but some will become maybe a little more pro-LGBT. And unless they're, you know, like so strongly religious that they just refuse to listen to anything that we say, they're going to move towards a better understanding of our community. And since education is progressive, is repetitive, like if you, you know, if we teach you that the color red is that color, if we keep telling you that, then pretty soon you're going to say on your own, oh, that car is red, that mm-hmm. book is blue. Well, education is like that. And so if we tell you that the term cisgender means someone whose personal identity matches the designation given to them at birth, after some point they're going to realize, yeah, you know, like that's how that works. It's not just that you're a boy because you have a penis. It's because that's the designation you were given, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's your gender. It just means mm-hmm. it's your biological sex. And so I think the way to go is education.
I agree. Do you encounter a lot of hostility when you do these things?
Very rarely. For the most part, when we do something like this, the overall feeling that I receive, you know, feedback back, is always extremely positive. I'm sure there are some people that walk away shaking their head, and I'm sure there are some people that have some evil thoughts in their mind. I mean, I'm not blind to that. But the reality is that the overall expression is usually one of understanding, of love, of, you know, thinking about how they could be a better ally to our community. So very rarely do I have any kind of issues. I mean, I get a stupid question from someone. Well, I can remember doing we did a presentation in one of the school districts for, you know, teachers and staff members. And, you know, someone was trying to be smart and said, well, what if the kid thinks they're a horse? You know, meaning yeah. somehow that they were going to relate being trans to, you know, thinking you were an animal.
Right.
And my answer to them was, well, I think you probably need to contact a mental health professional. And I just
yeah.
left it at that.
Or a zoo or a dude.
And there were people yeah. laughing in the audience because they realized what I was saying to them. You know,
people,
not so much that you need to go to a mental health professional because the kid thinks he's a horse, but because you've asked that question, you need to go to a mental health professional.
Hercules, how much time do we have? Hello, Hercules?
I'm here. We have 11 more minutes.
Okay. Thank you. Now, you're extraordinarily passable. No one would ever dream that you weren't born female, which is privilege of a kind, you have to admit.
Mm-hmm.
Many people are not. They are, as Laverne, the wonderful Laverne Cox, has said, trans is beautiful. She points out that she's much taller than most women, that her hands and feet are much larger, that she wears a much larger dress size. Do you think that because you are so really extraordinarily passable that you might have an excessively optimistic view of how people view trans? And do you think also that because you are so passable that it's easier for you to give these talks and lectures to people than it would be for, say, someone who's 6'7" and built like a sumo wrestler, but who wants to be a woman?
I would absolutely agree with your last point, and that is, you know, similar to what I said earlier about using my privilege in helping others who, you know, need help. And so absolutely, I believe that my ability to pass, my ability to be accepted is easier, and as a result, I think I do have a, you know, it is a positive impact But it's, excuse me. But it is indeed a privilege that I have this, and at least I can use it in a way that helps our community.
Well, that's wonderful. Good. You've been a guest on my television show so many times I can't count the many times. Every time you come on, you give us pearls of wisdom that change some people's lives for the better and that awaken even the technicians doing the show. So I think that's great. I think you're doing exactly what you're trying to do, and that's really good.
Well, we hope so. I mean, you know, there's a lot of work to be done, and it's sort of like, you know, close your eyes and throw a dart, you're going to hit a balloon. You know, it's not hard to make a difference and to keep working and try to make improvements. So, you know, it's funny. excuse me.
Bless you.
Yes, my whole life I felt like I was born at the wrong time. Like, oh, I wish I would have been born during the Revolutionary War. I wish I would have been during the Civil War. Or, you know, it would have been, you know, a chance for me to do great things. And the reality is that, you know, as I've grown older, I've realized that I'm born exactly when I was supposed to be born.
Exactly.
And the work
and
is
you're
in
doing,
front of me.
And if you were in a war, you would have a lot of positive reinforcement from your colleagues, you know, and your generals and all that. You're doing it without a lot of positive reinforcement here. That's much braver than being in a war.
Yeah, I guess. I think the thing is this, is that, you know, and I said earlier about staying in our backyard. You know, when I see articles about Texas and things, my heart goes out to Texans.
Yeah, mine too.
But there's not much that I can do other than perhaps send a donation to, you know, to maybe a trans organization or something in Texas. But here in New York State, there are things I can do. I can leave a message for the governor. I can call my local, you know, assembly member. I can go do a demonstration in front of, you know, an anti-LGBT group here in, you
and
know,
you can
in the
set
city
an
or
example
something.
For activists in more restrictive states as to how to do it, what to do, when to do it. You know, just by watching you work, they learn.
Yeah, we would hope that that's the case, and I think a lot of people have been turned on by seeing some of the things that we've been able to accomplish. So, again, I'm sort of proud of that as well.
You should be.
So, you know, I mean, I do think that, you know, it really turns out that I'm in the right place at the right time, and, you know, I feel lucky about that. I feel determined that I'm going to continue this work, and, you know, hopefully my health will hold up, and, you know, I'll be able to keep working for a number of years.
Okay, now how can people contact you?
Well, we can certainly give them my email address, which is juliowens, the number one, at AOL.com. They can send information to us via our website at genderequalityny.org. And we have a Facebook page as well. Which is I always have to remember what it is. Hang on one second. It's www.facebook.com/genderequalityny. So that's the way that you know they can get in touch with us. On our website, we do have questions, you know, answers to questions that people may have, and definitions and things that may help them. There's also notification of you know, various events that we're having or forums that we're doing, as well as, you know, work that we may be doing on legislation and so forth. And at our website, they can become, you know, add themselves to our mailing list, which, you know, we do mailings on a regular basis. In fact, I'm working on one right now. We're actually putting a questionnaire out to our members to find out some of the issues that they're facing across New York State. Some of the services that they need, and some of the projects that they'd like to see us work on. So, you know, those are the type of things that we do.
That's great. And also, if a cisgender heterosexual person goes on the websites and Facebook pages and all that, they can see that it will explain the trans situation in ways that nothing else can, I think.
Absolutely. I'm very proud of our Facebook page. And again, I don't deal with it at all. We have an amazing volunteer who is working with some of our part-time employees.
What's his or her name or their name?
Well, I'm going to keep that quiet, but the reality is that they have done some amazing work on our Facebook page. And rather than see all these horrible, bad, terrible stories, what we look for is the uplifting stories, the stories that are showing that things are changing, or the stories where a problem exists, but we can do something about it. And so, you know, I think people on our, you know, who go to our Facebook page will absolutely see things in a more positive light and in a possibly a more changeable light, if you will, that it doesn't have to be this way. Things can change. Things can get better. And all we need to do is work together.
I think that's great. And I certainly hope that we do all work together. And anyway, so, well, Hercules, how much time do we have left now?
I have 3 minutes.
Okay. Anything you want to say to people out there who are listening who might be trans or have trans friends or relatives or who might be horror of horrors contemplating suicide or whatever?
Well, I would say to anyone who is contemplating suicide to please try to connect with some mental health professionals. We need you. We love you. You know, we certainly want you around. And it's important that you stay and help us make a better life for those following us. So I think that that's really important. For those who are, you know, not in that dire situation, but have the means and the power to be able to help us make change, you know, consider getting involved, whether it's, you know, locally or whether it's, you know, statewide or, for that matter, whether you want to do something on a national basis. The reality is that you have abilities that you don't even know you have, and that, you know, a visit to your district assembly member's office, as an example, or something like that, can be a really uplifting experience.
Others, you help yourself.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But you know what? Helping others really is a drug. It's a positive drug. It's one that makes you feel really good inside and makes you determined that you can do more and want to help people. So, you know, I always suggest, you know, look outside and see if you can help. Stay in your backyard, but do what you can to make a change.
Sounds great. My guest has been Ms. Julie Gray Owens, superb and uber trans activist, who has done more for our community, the transgender community, than frankly anyone I can think of. I'm Diana Montford. This has been the Diana Montford Show. I love you, even if no one else loves you. I love you, and I'm sure you love them too, don't you, Julie?
Absolutely do. Good night, and thank you, everyone.
Goodbye. See you next time. Third Saturday of the month is the Diana Montford Show.
And I posted links to your Gender Equality New York website and Facebook page on the promo so people can find you a little bit easier.
Thank you so much. That's terrific.
Thank you for watching the show. Both of you, happy holidays, and I look forward to your next conversation.
Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
Thank you.
Well.
Good night now.
Good night.